Galatians chapter 6. Brothers, if someone is caught in a sin, you who are spiritual should restore him gently. But watch yourself, or you also might be tempted. Carry each other's burdens, and in this way you will fulfill the law of Christ. If anyone thinks he is something when he is nothing, he deceives himself. Each one should test his own actions. Then he can take pride in himself, without comparing himself to somebody else, for each one should carry his own load. Anyone who receives instructions in the world must share all good things with his instructor. Do not be deceived. God cannot be mocked. A man reaps what he sows. The one who sows to please his sinful nature, from that nature will reap destruction. The one who sows to please the Spirit, from the Spirit will reap eternal life. Let us not become weary in doing good, for at the proper time we will reap a harvest if we do not give up. Therefore, as we have opportunity, let us do good to all people, especially to those who belong to the family of believers. Can I begin by saying this is a mistake? I shouldn't be here. I had no intention to be here. I didn't particularly want to be here. At the end of this, you probably will agree with me that it is a mistake and I shouldn't have been here, but we'll get to that in a while. Peter, our minister, as you've discovered, is away this week. He does most of the preaching here. Well, it's his job. And we have two retired ministers, Jeff and Roger, to stand in for him. We are blessed with three such able people to lead us. There are, of course, some dates left over. So normally Peter makes up a rota and emails me a copy of it and asks me to try and fill in some of the gaps because I have to be church secretary here. And I call on the contacts that I have and the people from the fellowship here to fill those gaps. And this normally works quite well. We were away over Christmas and the New Year, and I didn't look at my emails particularly when I got back in the New Year. And then one Thursday evening in mid to late January, Gwyneth, who was playing the piano, emailed me or phoned me and said, "The newsletter is coming out tomorrow. I'm putting it to print. Who is preaching tonight?" And I thought Peter had sorted it. I thought everything was straightforward. There really wasn't anybody else that could, within hearing, that I could approach at such short notice. So that's why you've got me. It's Muggins' turn. But then I got to thinking about responsibilities. I guess I had failed at this base, so I wanted to build up as many excuses as I could. Aren't we all like that? Why was it my fault? Why was it my responsibility to organise the preaching when Peter was away? I happen to be church secretary, one of the things I'm trying to give up, but I haven't had another contender to take over yet, but that's another story. Even though I'm church secretary, it doesn't necessarily mean I have to arrange things like this. I guess I do it because no one else does it, and until now I've done it reasonably well. Okay. No one's complained much. Why doesn't someone else do it? I'm just a volunteer. I'm not paid to do it. It's not my job. It's not in the contract. So I had a good moan to myself. But then I got thinking, what are or should be my responsibilities to this church? Or equally, what are or should be yours? And related to that question was the question of, what do I mean by church? What do you mean by church? Do we agree about it? And so I bring these musings to you tonight, not because you'll be interested in my particular problems, but I believe we should all consider what we mean by church, what we expect from it, what responsibility we have, or at least ought to have, to this thing called church. So I start with a question, which sort of thing, where do I belong? Where do I feel at ease? Where do I feel wanted, needed? Where do I feel at home? And the simple, and I hope correct answer is, I belong to this church, to Penrault. I'm a member of this church, and in some respects it's my home. What do we mean by church? What do we expect by church? As we read, I belong to the family of believers, as Paul calls it in the NIV, or to the household of faith, as the older King James Version say it, or the community of faith, as the Message calls it. What is this church that I belong to? Deceptively easy question, and in one sense, a straightforward answer, because there is only one church. In Matthew, Jesus says to Peter, I will build my church. The old hymn says, the church's one foundation is Jesus Christ, her Lord. She is his new creation by water and the word. From heaven he came and sought her to be his holy bride. With his own blood he bought her. For her life he died. And the elect, the chosen from every nation, yet one o'er all the earth, her charter of salvation comes from one Lord, one faith, one birth, one holy name. She blesses, partakes one holy food, communion, to one hope we press with every grace endued. One church. Last autumn, Mike Straker, who used to work for the Christian Unions here, spoke about adoption, about belonging, about being accepted by God, being welcomed into the courts of the King. There's, of course, no entrance fee. There's no admission charge. The house of God is a public place, an open house. Anyone can come in because Jesus has paid the price. All that is needed is to accept his offer and come. Come to his party in heaven. Come to the wedding feast. Come. But don't simply come as a guest. Welcome though you will be. On Alpha, we speak of the guests, those who are invited to join us as we learn more about Jesus. But the intention is that they don't stay as guests. We each can change if we want to, if we decide to, if we accept Jesus, if we become his disciple. We move from being a guest to being a member of the household of faith, as Galatians says. From being a visitor to being adopted, of belonging. You can come into a church building as often as you like. You can join in the singing. You can share in the food. There's a faith cafe afterwards. You can go to that and have the entertainment. You can meet in someone's house during the week and still be a guest, still not belong. I've got an HSBC card. It just means that they're nice to me when they take my money. Joan has an M&S card. It gives her all kinds of extras and points and special offers, etc. But in neither case do we belong. We're just passing through. They don't really care about us. They may help us. They may be very polite. They may give us good service. We might even develop a kind of brand loyalty to them. But it won't do us any good. If we get into any difficulties, we will still just be a number at the end of the line from India. They will still withdraw the overdraft facility at the drop of a hat. They will call in the loan just when we're beginning to get back on our feet. Or as an individual, as a business, we may belong in name, but not in fact. To take another example, I belong to the AA. No, last year I belonged to the AA. This year I belong to the RAC. Or is it the green flag? I don't really know and I don't really care. I went for the cheapest deal I could get, which will give me some guarantee of support if things go wrong with my car. I'm just a number to them, and they're just a fallback position for me. It comes with very little cost. There's no loyalty, there's no interaction, there's no belonging, just a yearly fee, and the cheaper the better. What church do you belong to? Or don't you? Let's step back a moment and think about what we mean by church. Church is, of course, the body of Christ. It's united, as Paul says. There is one body and one spirit in Ephesians. And in 1 Corinthians, you are the body of Christ. Each one of you is part of it. And then he goes on to say what various people of the church are appointed to do, about our roles. The church is the expression of Jesus here on earth. And fundamentally, that is what we join, or don't. We belong to, or don't. The choice is ours, yours, or mine. Where do you belong? But the word church is used both in this global sense, this one church, this church of Christ, and also in the local sense. Paul writes to Galatians and begins by addressing the churches in Galatia, small, local, individual communities. So let me ask, what is your local church, your local group, your local community? What's it for? Where do you belong? Where do I belong? In the grand scheme of things, I belong to my Lord and to his church. But how does that play out here and now? What church do I belong to, and should I, and do I? And what do we mean by it? First of all, I would say by church, I don't mean temple. I think of them as different things. A temple is a place of ritual, of ceremony. Nothing wrong with that, but it's not the essence of a church. A temple is where you go to for public occasions, to mark significant milestones in your life. Church buildings, particularly cathedrals, have that role. It's where the population descends in times of rejoicing, in times of national calamity. It's a place to go to, but not a place to belong. Some people are employed to look after it on our behalf, but I anyway feel a bit uncomfortable when I go into such a building. I stand back and gaze, but I'm not at home. It's not mine. I'm not part of it. Even if it's a Christian temple, like the Basilica at Rome or one of the magnificent Spanish cathedrals, the paintings may be marvellous, the music may sound divine, the whole experience may be personally uplifting, but it's not me. It's not what I mean by church. Penrhyn in no way compares with the cathedral for all that the band tries. But do you think of it as a place where you go to, or a place where you belong? Church is not a working men's club or a conservative club or the Bullingdon Club or the Rotary or the Lions. It's not the equivalent of a social where you stop in for a swift half on the way back from work to unwind. It's not even a spiritual club where you go to for a couple of yoga exercises and a spot of transcendental meditation. A church is something you belong to. So I'm much more interested in this thought from Paul in Galatians. It's the family of believers, the community of faith, the household of faith. And the message says, right now, therefore, every time you get the chance, let us work for the benefit of all, starting with the people closest to us in the community of faith. The King James Version says, do good, especially to those who are of the household of faith. So back to my question, what is my household of faith? What is yours? What's my family of believers? Do I belong to it? Do they know that I belong to it? Do I do good? Paul in Galatians 6 talks about doing good to all. And that, of course, is right and good, because we must never say, not help you. You're not our type. You're not our race. You're not our whatever, so we won't do good to you. But there is a danger in thinking that because we should do good to all, that we must do good to everyone. And we get overwhelmed by the everyone. Sometimes of an evening here, we're asked to pray. As a way of getting us to pray, Peter will say, let's pray for a country. I find that very difficult. How can I pray for a country of 5 or 50 million people at one go? What can I say in 2 minutes? What can I think in 2 minutes? I become childish in my prayers, and it's a bit like, God bless mummy, God bless daddy, God bless everyone. It doesn't have any impact or contact because I'm not involved with it. I become childish. You can't say it's wrong, but to pray for Southern Africa in 2 minutes seems a bit superficial. St. Paul, whose letters are full of prayers for people and communities that he's met on his journeys, encourages us to concentrate on the household of faith, the church. And in this letter to the Galatians, he means the church to whom he's writing, the ones to you, my fellow Galatians, you belong to. So where do you belong? What is your household like? I've been thinking about households. What is yours like? Visiting students over a period of time, I've seen some households. I've been really amazed. No, don't laugh. I'm amazed how well they can manage. When I went to college a long time ago, I could do nothing. Well, I could read. And I could write, but not very legibly. I could manage my finances because I had none and didn't have to pay anything because it was all sorted. I could study, I could concentrate, I could succeed academically, but I was hugely dependent on others. I had someone to make my bed, I even had somebody to clean my shoes. It shows how spoiled I was. Washing machines, I'd seen them. Tumble dryers were outside my price bracket, to use the laundrette, let alone to buy. Fortunately, the terms are very short and I survived. Nowadays, when I go to any student household, they seem to manage very well. I call in a student, go into the communal room, they rustle up a drink, and we're all very friendly. They manage to look after themselves. But there is the crux. They look after themselves. So you go into the place, the room is perhaps a mess, their bit is perfect, the other bit is somebody else's responsibility, I'm not touching it. Some of us are so used to living in a public place that we consider our household of faith to be just me. Our household is limited to just me. And so it is when we come to spiritual things. My faith is personal. My church is me and my God. The mess around me is too big for me to contemplate, so I just concentrate on keeping myself clean with God. That's the limit of my responsibility. Peter, our minister, is very keen on the triangle. I think it's his favourite instrument. The triangle, in case you haven't seen, has three things. It points up to God, one way to the church, in and out to the rest of the world. And we need to be balanced. A personal faith and a link up to God is not sufficient. Paul says in verse 1 we just read, brothers, if someone is caught in sin, you who are spiritual should restore him gently. And in verse 2 he says, carry each other's burdens. You have responsibility for the household of faith that you are part of, to which you belong, if so be that you belong. Paul says that we have responsibilities. At the beginning of Galatians 6, there's a fair bit of talk about bearing. And there's several ways in which you can bear. You can say, let Jesus bear, let Jesus carry my problems. After all, that's what he's there for. Jesus will carry your burdens. We can say, I will carry Jesus' problems, Jesus' burdens. I won't accept that Jesus is the only one able to bear the sins of the world. I will insist on carrying my own and ignoring him. We can say, you can carry my burdens. You can carry my problems. I like that version. My load is heavy, and I would gladly let you carry it for me for a while. I'm sure it would do you good. Is that why you come to church? Is that why you like Christian fellowship? The church is said to be the only organization whose primary concern is not its members but others. Is it good to have someone else to take the strain? Is that the motivation for belonging, coming, being a guest, a visitor in this fellowship? Or I can help carry your problems. Personally, I'm not fond of that version. Are you? But that is the one that Paul is talking about here. As far as it is in you, as we have opportunity, let us do good. Or, as the message says, let us not get fatigued doing good. Right now, therefore, every time we have a chance, let us work for the benefit of all, starting with the people closest to us in the community of faith. Not when we're feeling fit and strong, not at the beginning of the day, not when we're not too tired, not when we feel like it, but whenever we have the opportunity. So back to my original. When I get fed up sorting things out in Penrault, I must remember that it is my responsibility to take my share of the burden of this fellowship of believers, because it's where I have belong. I have committed to them. What community are you committed to? May not be Penrault, but hopefully you are committed to a fellowship of fellow believers. A formal church, informal, doesn't really matter. There's a lot of talk recently in the news about making commitments. When I was young and a man and woman made a commitment in marriage, that was that. It was permanent, at least in the eyes of society. There was no question of whether it suited, or you were happy, or any other reason why you might not feel like a change. The commitment had been made. Going back another generation to my parents and grandparents, unless you were a lord or had a few million to spend on the fees, or were both, you couldn't break the commitment. Marriage was permanent, it was enshrined in law. And of course, if two blokes felt so inclined, they didn't even dare mention the fact, or they would be not only shunned, but be prosecuted. Nowadays, we're in a right mess. Those who could not get married are clamoring to make their commitment public. Those who have committed are falling over themselves to get out of the commitments. In fact, it's so easy now, it's almost like changing your energy supplier. Some think it's a bit like the AA and the RSE that I mentioned early on. You feel that you ought to sign up to one of them just in case, but there's not much to choose, and you might get a better deal this year than you had last year, so you might change. Because the distant fields, distant grass always looks greener on the other side. Green flag is quite the in thing, I gather. So those who could not get married are now wishing to, and those that who are married are wishing to get divorced. And then there are those who are scared to get married, even though it's dead easy to cancel. On the other hand, even though they won't sign up, they expect society to treat them as if they are married, and get furious when the benefits from the state or from the insurance companies don't materialise because they're not technically married. They expect the rights that come from being married, but they refuse to sign up to the responsibilities. What are you committed to? Thursday's was Valentine's Day. Joan still hasn't thanked me for the roses I bought, partly because I didn't. Thursday was Valentine's Day, a day for roses and chocolates, it says down here, and cards and kisses. A day for falling in love. But I read in the Baptist Times this week an article. Apparently a father had overheard his 4-year-old say, You can't fall in love. You've just got to stand in it. No wonder her dad was stunned. She's not even at school yet, and she's always worked it out. And this prompted the writer to comment on the card shops and the high street and the commercial attitude to love. She said, "They sell us the glamorous, the fresh, sexy, hearts and flowers version, but never the slightly saggy, less glamorous one that's seen you steadfastly through 15, 20 or 40 years of marriage. You can't buy a card that says, 'Thank you for being there when I had the worst day at work, came home to cat sick, the washing machine was leaked, and I discovered a lump.' There isn't a good enough present for love that sticks solidly by you while you work your way through depression. Our love isn't sexy underwear from Ann Summers. It's Marks and Spencer's bomb-proof stuff that's been through the washing machine a lot. It may be faded and a bit out of shape, but it's still love. Retailers want to sell you instant love. They're not interested in selling you one that you have to assemble at home and tinker with until it works." Which brings me back to the church, because the church is the church of God. The church is the church of Christ. The church is the church of Jesus, who loves us, for God is love. The church which requires us to love God and our neighbour, to your church and mine. Do we belong? Do we belong to a fellowship of believers, whether it's a formal group or an informal group, whether it's friends and housemates that depend on you and you on them? So as I come to the end, if the musicians would like to join me on the platform for the final hymn, can I ask us together, are we committed? Do we belong? Have we signed up in our minds, in our hearts? Have we told anyone? Or are we just a guest? Are we still visiting? Are we still expecting to get, to receive? What are we prepared to give? When we are in up mode, we can make well sing that we are willing to give everything to Jesus. But helping the actual person next to us is asking us something else. And how long do we expect to be committed? Is it a permanent, or is it like the AA, just for a while? Paul says, bear one another's burdens. Paul says, do good as far as you are able, because you belong to the household of faith. Let's give it a try.